is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The G7 meeting just concluded in Japan. The headline is provocative. This is Reuters. Beijing rebukes Japan, Britain over anti-China G7 summit. Anti-China is in quotes. The headline follows the first graph. State-backed Chinese mouthpiece Global Times called the G7 an anti-China workshop. A day after Beijing summoned Japan's envoy and berated Britain in a fiery response to statements issued at the group's summit in Hiroshima. This is a gathering of the prosperous of the earth, making it very clear, I understand, in many of the remarks, that the contest in Europe right now, driven by the invasion of Ukraine by Russia, is in some fashion connected to the aggression by the People's Republic of China against India, against the Philippines, against Japan, against all their neighbors. And the G7 pushed back hard. At the same time, there was what you'd have to say bilateral conversation on the edges. Mr. Zelensky attended, and that in itself was a surprising turn of G7. What is your measure of this victim play that China's putting forth? You're acting all anti-China. You're not working with this. Is this off-the-shelf geopolitics from China, or are they on to something new?
No, it's something that they've been doing for some time. They've always said that, you know, in order to get subsidies, they play the card that they're an underdeveloped country, therefore they deserve trading concessions and the like. They always say, well, we don't interfere in the politics of other countries and we don't threaten other countries. We don't tell countries what to do. And yet, of course, they threaten to destroy Australia with nuclear weapons in the last couple of years. They've done that repeatedly, by the way. They've threatened all manner of repercussions to people who they don't like. And yet they act all coy and hurt when somebody calls them on something. And to my mind, the G7 summit was not that meaningful. Yes, they did push back against Beijing to a degree, and it was a show of, if you like, solidarity in the West against the PRC, because now, with Cold War II, we are now seeing that whether the PRC will accept this or not, that they have actually claimed that the West is their enemy. They declared war on the United States in 2018, and now the West is saying, well, China is a problem. And investment is in China, is the People's Republic of China, is slowing commensurately. So it's actually getting serious for Beijing, because they've lost their investment. U.S. companies in particular have been pulling out at a great rate. Other country U.S. companies are trying to figure out how to withdraw, because they know that they're losing their investments, and therefore the huge funds which have come from U.S. pension funds. So this is the retirement plans of many Americans caught up in bad investments in mainland China. But still, the G7 really did not call out the PRC on this. They didn't call out the PRC on the fact that at the same time that the G7 was getting ready to sit down, Xi Jinping had called a conference in Xi'an, the city of Xi'an in mainland China, to which he invited the five Central Asian heads of state to come and talk about how they could develop plans and integrate with the PRC economy and with the logistics chain which the PRC wants to build across the Eurasian landmass, so that the PRC can avoid dealing with the outside world, with the maritime nations. The PRC has at the same time undertaken a massive reversal of the trade deal which it signed with the Donald Trump administration in the United States to buy U.S. farm goods. It's canceled large orders for U.S. Grain and soybeans, I understand, and has attempted to replace that by huge grain and soybean orders from countries such as Brazil in particular. So basically, Beijing is trying to build up its internal resilience, its internal Eurasian lines of supply and communication, so that it will be less vulnerable to the G7 nations and the United States in particular when the crunch comes, when the big confrontation finally takes place. They're hoping that that will not take place. They're hoping that the U.S. will and Europe will start to degrade economically of their own weight and folly, so that the PRC will be the last man standing. But as it's looking now, the economic erosion is taking place most rapidly in mainland China itself. So it looks as though the last man standing will be the United States, and perhaps the PRC and the European Union countries will be fighting for who's in second or third place in that. So we are seeing a major war take place, and we have, as a result, seen the end of the stability which we saw in the post-World War II era. The U.S.-dominated so-called rules-based world order is finished. The question is whether the United States can rebuild something to take its place, or whether we will see a period where we have relative lawlessness in the international environment until regional powers start to stake out regional rules-based orders, as we saw with Pax Romana and Pax Sinica in the Han Dynasty, 2,000 years ago. The major powers will try to dominate their regions, but we've only ever seen under Pax Britannica and Pax Americana, an actual global rules-based world order, and that's now coming to an end. The question is, can the West recover? Can the United States recover its position there? And right now, it's clear that they cannot, unless something happens in the next few years. But right now, we're seeing the continued degradation of the Western ability to control global affairs. There's no Western dominance of the airways or of space or of the high seas at this point.
Mr. Zelensky's attendance at the G7, did that have significance for China? I know it was chiefly about Mr. Zelensky speaking with Prime Minister Modi of India about the apparent fence sitting that India is conducting in the war. But I don't know if China pays attention to Zelensky. Is he an issue? Is Ukraine an issue for Beijing?
Oh, yes, it is. I mean, Ukraine is an historical and potential supplier of large amounts of foodstuff and other commodities to the PRC. They have also in the past provided a lot of defense and aerospace technology to the PRC. So, yes, they are critical. And, yes, the PRC wishes to be seen as rising in global stature and prestige by being the country which will negotiate the end or the ceasefire or the of the war between Russia and the Ukraine. And they could well do that. And Zelensky's visit to G7, yes, it was about continuing to curry support from the United States in particular and the European countries, because that support is waning, and also to get India off the fence, as you say. That's not going to happen. But basically, Zelensky is also trying to tell Beijing, look, you've got to offer me something really, really good if you want me to sign a ceasefire agreement, because unless Zelensky is made to look very, very good in this end of the war scenario with Russia, he will not survive either physically or politically. So he has to have a deal which makes him look as though he's won, even though Russia is going to end up with the control of what was for the past 50 years, eastern Ukraine.
Back to the headline in Reuters about calling the Japan envoy, the ambassador from Japan, to rebuke him. Beijing, what is their opinion of Tokyo? What is the Chinese Communist Party's opinion of Tokyo these many years after the Second War? Does Japan intimidate Beijing? Does Beijing want revenge? Why is it that they have this friction that seems outside of all the other contests that were underway?
Yes, it's the ostensible call for revenge and justice over the Japanese invasions over the past 150 years of Chinese territory.
But we know the Chinese Communist Party didn't have anything to do with the Japan War. They stayed out of it. I mean,
that's right.
It's a complete canard that they're going to revenge themselves. They were not in it.
That's absolutely the case. And if anybody should be seeking revenge, it would be the nationalists, the Kuomintang, who fought the war against Japan and by the way, won. And they also, as a result, won China's seat in the United Nations Security Council, the permanent seat there, which now Beijing occupies because it was stolen from the Republic of China and given to the People's Republic of China by particularly Jimmy Carter. So the reality is that this is a canard to attempt to give the Communist Party of China some credibility that it is defending Chinese interests and the dignity of China. And but the reality is that Japan's military capability does indeed concern Beijing, because what we've seen in the past 2 years is how rapidly Japan, even with its political constraints, has been able to rebuild its defense capability and move it from a truly defensive capability into one which has the potential to do retaliatory or primary strikes into Chinese territory and maritime assets. So Japan's capability does concern the PRC, largely because it's technologically advanced, it's highly professional, and when it moves, it will move decisively.
A detail about the G7. Following the G7, the president made remarks about a thaw in the Cold War. And soon after that, there was the usual trade war, the Chinese declaring that Micron Technologies, chiefly of Idaho, was a security risk, some constructed insult. Does China believe that it can engage the U.S. with this bully boy tactics?
Well, it attempts to do so, and it attempts to gain the moral high ground, which is why you've seen newspapers like the Global Times, which 10 years ago or 15 years ago was trying to be a credible news source, which made China look credible. It's moved for that to being a rabid propaganda piece, because Beijing is very, very concerned. And look, Beijing is not concerned about having any success by sanctioning U.S. companies, because that's all symbolic. It's talking in terms that the U.S. understands. Because what triggered much of the panic response over the past 8 or so years in Beijing was the fact that the U.S. were putting sanctions on PRC and then later Russian companies and people, individuals, with such profound effect that Beijing, you know, has started to rearm and become very offensive in its military actions, literally in response to the fact that the U.S. had woken up to its theft of technological property and its secret expansion. And so the U.S., by putting on these embargoes, panicked Beijing. Beijing is now building its armed forces up with a real capability. It's attempting to do the same thing that the U.S. did to it, which is sanctions warfare. The reality is that sanctions are the weapon of the United States, and they have not really been that effective and positive. They've actually triggered the PRC into rebuilding its defenses, just as sanctions against South Africa and Zimbabwe and Chile in the old days actually forced those countries to build up autonomous capabilities. And they've done the same thing with the PRC. But the PRC has had its own way of fighting indirect warfare, which is its approach to new total war, which I talk about in my recent book. But they also evolved in their strategy of unrestricted warfare, which began in 1999, to formulate how to fight wars without actually having to put troops against each other.
Gregory Copley, Defense and Foreign Affairs. We're headed to my favorite of the week, the King Charles III Report. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.